Thanks so much for listening in on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mueller. You know, there doesn't seem to be a lot of encouraging or fun news lately in this COVID-19 era. So we thought it would be a perfect time to have our next guest on. He always has some fun and heartwarming stories to share with us. Our editor of Our Wisconsin Magazine, Mike Beno, back with us. We'll talk to him about some of the people, places, and events that make Wisconsin special. I know there's a story about a therapy dog. There's a 98-year-old quilter. And a fascinating story I found about maps. You can join in the conversation. Do you read Our Wisconsin? Favorite story? Question about it? Give a call. The number is 1-800-642-1234. Or you can email us at ideas@wpr.org. We'd love to hear from you. And Mike Beno, welcome back.
Larry, it's great to be back. And up here in Manitowish Waters, there's a little bit of snow yet in the woods. Now, I know you said I'd bring some good news. that's okay. It's sunny outside, and you're right. In the pages of Our Wisconsin, I can guarantee you there is one word you're never going to see. Can you guess what that one is?
Well, let's see, COVID-19?
There you are. COVID-19, pandemic, coronavirus. All of those fit, and luckily, our editor is not smart enough to know how to spell any of those. So, but he is here to be optimistic, and it's our job to be optimistic in this magazine and to share that in every issue. And you're right, we need that more than ever now, and we're up to the job.
Has your practices or procedures or whatever changed much during this pandemic?
Not much. First of all, I think I'm seated in a place where it's probably the safest place to be in the state. In far northern Wisconsin, between March 15th, when snowmobiling's done, till May 1st, when fishing's comes back around, not a lot's going on. It's kind of quiet anyhow. It's gotten much more quiet. But we work in an office that nobody really comes into. Media is an essential service. I think we are more essential than ever to bring some good news. Our Facebook feed gets 30,000 people following it. And the interesting thing, Larry, is that we talk to the newsstand people. Magazines are selling well, better than normal. That's not surprising. Subscribers, renewals, people, they're holding steady as normal. And advertising, we don't have much. We don't depend on that first. But our entire roster is hanging with us. And I think they recognize this is temporary, and it's going to be from homebound to a rebound in state tourism pretty darn soon. As soon as the all clear is given, you know, I got to think, in my own family, all the grandkids are home for 2 months and then 3 more months. Well, air travel's getting scuttled. Guess what? The simplest thing and the most economical thing to do is get in your car and visit Wisconsin and maybe take part in our treasure hunt, win a teardrop travel trailer. I think it's going to blossom very soon.
Yeah, I appreciate your thoughts on that. That you mentioned the trailer, the camping trailer, and that's kind of a... Well, the trailer isn't a regular feature, but a yearly feature is a contest that you have, which is always a lot of fun. And this year, the prize is a camping trailer. It looks like a pretty nice one, too.
Yeah, this is fun because for the listeners who may not know about this, we have a hidden object contest. We hide a key to a dandy prize somewhere in a park in this big state. Could be any public park. And so far, we've given away some prizes, including new cars, new boats, and we have this teardrop trailer, camping trailer. This one's 5x9, and you can pull them with the smallest of cars. The photo you're looking at in our April-May issue, Larry, I was coming down to see this trailer on display at Canoocopia, at the Alliant Energy Center in March. That was one of the events that, unfortunately, one of the first ones that was canceled. 22,000 people come there to see Darren Bush's big display of boats and other things. Well, when this trailer, that photo of that trailer was taken at Canoocopia the night before the plug was pulled. I was on my way down to photograph it, and, you know, so we've all had some changes. But people right now, the state parks are open. If you practice social distancing, you head out and check around in parks. We've got in our magazine every issue on page 24. We have a map in which we take out 10 counties and narrow the search area issue by issue. We give clues. And if you find the hidden key, this baby's yours, and it's really tricked out. I've learned it's by Todd and Carol Maurer at TC Teardrops in Wausau. They custom build them, and there's no end to the roof racks and the bicycle carrier racks on the back and the inverters for the batteries and the mattresses. And people love these things, and I guarantee you somebody's going to be a happy camper when they find the key to this.
No, yeah, it really looks cool. I don't know if I'd be eligible for it or not, but I guess most everybody is, except people, of course, who work for the magazine and write for the magazine.
Get out there and look, Larry. You don't work for the magazine, but you're going to have to put on some miles, man. Maybe get on your hands and knees and look. Who knows?
Okay, Mike Vino, our guest. Question or comment for him, maybe an experience to share relating to the magazine or not, give a call, 1-800-642-1234. Email at ideas@wpr.org. Love to hear from you. Well, you mentioned fishing, and you've got a couple of articles in your this April-May issue that relate to trout, actually steelhead. Tom Davis has a piece in there, and Les Harris, I think, had a piece.
Len Harris, he lives in Richland Center, and he is a dyed-in-the-wool trout fisherman. He grew up in Gays Mills, and of course, you're there in the Driftless area. There's just premier blue ribbon trout streams. You could not fish every inch of them in a lifetime if you wanted to. Sorry if I'm letting that secret out, but people that want to fish streams for trout, there's a lot of streams in the state, but right there is a beautiful place to go. And Len, he's written for a number of different sporting magazines, and we're not one of them. We touch on this a little bit. We're general interest, but he's got a wonderful. It's a touching story to me about growing up in the '60s. He's a kid in Gays Mills, and his pa would take him to Reber's gas station on Sunday in this little small town, and all the old boys are in there reclining. The same group shows up on Sunday mornings. They all have their pecking order and their assigned seats that they all go to, and Dad had his, and he took his son there, little guy, and Len remembers this. And in 1967, a heart attack claimed his dad way too young at 40. Guy had a 39-year-old wife and six children, including Len. Well, a fellow named Gino McNamee took him under his wing and taught this young man from age 12 on to 18 how to hunt and fish and be one of the guys at a time when he needed it. He had his mother and a house full of five sisters, so he had a little bit of the male bonding experience for a young boy. And he appreciated it last year, about 50 years later, more than 50 years later, of fishing with Gino, when Gino's son, Steve, now an adult with a boy of his own, a young man of his own, Preston, gave a call to Len and asked if he wouldn't mind taking his son out hunting or out fishing. Well, Len fell all over himself to repay the favor. And got him out, and it was on a sunny day, which isn't the very best for fishing streams. You got to find a little shade to hide. And eventually, some clouds came in, and Len's a fisherman. I'm not going to say he stretches the truth, but he's saying that they began fishing in the morning, and between 7 o'clock and not even noon, they landed 67 brown trout in the Gays Mills area. And I kind of believe him because he worked as a guide for quite a while and knows all these streams. But getting the opportunity to repay that to a young man and also pay that into the future, because I'm sure he will never, the young man will never forget it. I think it is absolutely fantastic. Preston is his name, and yeah, we've got that story in there. A little bit more than how to catch a fish or how to tie on a bait.
Yeah, it was a really touching story. I enjoyed it very much, and I enjoyed Tom Davis's story too about steelhead fishing. And we can probably get to that story. Well, we may not have time for that story right at the moment. Our guest today is Mike Beno. Mike is editor of Our Wisconsin magazine. It's we have him on pretty much every issue when an issue comes out or when it's been out for a little bit. And he has the April-May issue for 2020 out right now, and that's what we're talking about with him. And there are a lot of interesting stories. We'll talk about some more of those stories. And, of course, we'll take your own questions or maybe experiences that you've had here in our fine state. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us. The email address is ideas@wpr.org. I'm Larry Mueller. We'll take a quick look at the news, weather, find out what else is in store for us here on the Ideas Net, and then we'll be back with Mike Beno of Our Wisconsin Magazine. You stay with us. Thanks for tuning into the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. You know, it's always fun to have Mike Beno stop by. He is the editor of Our Wisconsin magazine. Great to have him along. Certainly, he has lots of good stories to tell, and the many good stories are found in his Our Wisconsin magazine. We have the April-May issue that we're talking about right now. You know a great person or place you'd like to tell us about. I'd love to hear from you as well. Give us a call. The number's 1-800-642-1234, or you can send us an email to ideas@wpr.org. Love to hear from you. And, Mike, we have some callers online who have some comments and questions. Let's go to Jimmy in Portage first. Hi, Jimmy. Thank you for calling.
Well, thanks for having me on. My wife and I really love your program.
Thank you.
I just wanted to make a comment that I've been keeping a logbook since 1998 on all my trout fishing, and I fished over there in Vernon County a lot at the West Fork Sportsman. And I've had some really awesome days over there. I can vouch for those 80 trout days when I myself caught 60 trout in 3 hours over on the West Fork of the Kickapoo.
Whoa.
Oh.
Well, so Len Harris, maybe, thank you, Jimmy, for calling. Appreciate it. So Len Harris, when he said he caught 60, they caught 65 that day, that Jimmy says that's not unusual.
Well, yeah, Jimmy, thank you for vouching for that and verifying that. People like you and Len Harris are capable of catching that many fish. I know I haven't done that in my life, so you guys are a lot smarter than me. I started my career many years ago at the Portage Daily Register, so enjoyed living in that town too.
Jimmy, thank you so much. Andy in Mount Horeb, let's go to you next. Hi, Andy.
Hi, Larry and Mike. we started coming up to northern Wisconsin in 1952. My dad worked for a company called Western Electric, which was the manufacturing end of the Bell system. And the company would shut down for 2 weeks, the last 2 weeks in July, to retool, and a bunch of the people would go up to the Minocqua area on vacation. And the company, we stayed at Van's Mercer Lake Resort, which is just west of Minocqua, and the company would throw a big party at the Fence Lake Lodge. And it was a good time, and the little kids would run around the balcony and play around. And my dad would go out early in the morning and fish. And he'd fish for panfish, bluegills, and crappie. And on Friday, he did a cookout of fish for the entire resort.
Oh, fantastic. Man. Fence Lake Lodge, it's sounding like near Lac de Flambeau to me. And... yeah, I've run into a lot of people who describe the things you're talking about, Andy, and what we'd try to do, and still I live up here near Boulder Junction, Presque Isle. When I know guests are coming, try to catch the fish early on, and then you get that fish fry going the first night. Well, I guarantee you, for the rest of the time, well, that the fish holds out, they'll be snacking on that stuff cold out of the fridge and eating it for breakfast with eggs and bailing together sandwiches. That's my brother-in-law, Mark Cromie from Grafton. He just can't lay off that fish the whole time it's there. So do your fish fry. When you come up here in the summer, when everything's all let loose and you're traveling, catch the fish first. Do the fish fry first. You'll never lose.
Andy, thanks a lot. You can join in, too, at 800-642-1234. Give a call with your questions and comments or maybe your experiences to share. That was a good one. And, you know, some of those older stories, well, like Len Harris's story, you know, it goes back a ways, but you've got a number of stories like that in your book, which I think are a lot, in your magazine, which I think are a lot of fun.
Yeah, it's a current day magazine for sure. But the memory stories come in, and they are, first of all, they're always, for me anyway, they're always the easiest to tell because they always have a beginning, middle, and end. Once upon a time, you know, it's not just a list of ideas. And Larry, I don't know if you saw that story in there about the old-time bowling alleys in Sauk City.
Yes, four lanes, I think it was, or something like that.
Well, I'm going to ask you a question after I go. The reason I like these stories about these in this particular Sauk City lanes has been there 100 years in the same family. It's still rolling and going in Sauk City. And just about anywhere you go in the state of Wisconsin through the years, the smallest towns would have bowling alleys, and there's nothing like them. You walk in, and they smell the same. The sounds of the ball hitting the long-oiled hardwood lane and then the maple pins crashing, nothing else sounds like that. Nothing else smells like that. They're dark, they're cozy and homey, and people are always happy in them. In this particular story, of course, they're talking about pin setters. Larry, did you ever work as a pin setter?
I did not.
It would be cool if somebody called in and could tell us about what it was like to set pins by hand for about 15 different lanes with these pins flying and getting out of the way and all. I hope that can happen. But this memories of bowling and it really the small town social hub where families got to know each other, neighbors talked, they got the news, all that. They're fun places, and that's a good example of the memories kind of things you're talking about.
Yeah, and another story that I guess we wouldn't call it a memory story in a way, but it was certainly has some historical roots, was Arthur Robinson, a UW professor and map maker, and he changed how we view the world.
He did.
Yeah.
And, you know, we here and there we'll get a little tip on a story. And there's so much of historic significance that really happened in Wisconsin through the years. And Arthur Robinson went a long way in creating the modern science of cartography. It's a science in from the standpoint it's rooted in mathematics, but he added some art to it in order to change that. He was born in 1915, but it went to in Canada, but he earned his master's in geography at Madison in the 1930s, and he got so good at it, he paid for his studies by drawing maps for the books that were written by his professors. So kind of a prodigy that way, and he was so strong as a young man in college. World War II broke out. The Office of Strategic Services, this is a forerunner of the CIA, invited him, recruited him to come to Washington and create maps for military operations in World War II. He ended up heading that up, and for the duration of the war, it created 5,000 maps, but this young man in his 20s had to have prior knowledge of every major Allied military operation, including D-Day, before it happened. And if he didn't get these maps right, so he couldn't talk to anybody about this. If he didn't get it right, people's lives were on the line. And that's how important it was. Well, he left that. He was making an extremely good living. He went back to teach at UW. Today, there's a library named in his honor, the Arthur H. Robinson Map Library. His son Stephen still works there, is a professor. The most, even more important than World War II, his contribution is he changed the way we look at the world. In 1569, okay, we've all seen it. It's a flat, oval-shaped map of the world. Okay, yeah. If you took a globe and flattened it out, a 3D object, and flattened it into two, we've seen that oval map of the world. That dates to 1569. It's called the Mercator projection because a Flemish cartographer named Gerardus Mercator created it. It hung in government, in every school, in government halls all around. When you flatten a globe, you're going to get some exaggerated sizes of different lands. There's going to be a lot of distortion. And the Mercator, for example, made Greenland four times its actual size, bigger than South America. So Rand McNally came to this genius at Wisconsin and challenged him and said, can you make a better one? Now, this beat what's happened, you know, the common knowledge going back to 1569. He said about it, and he said, well, it's like if you take an orange and draw a face on it, peel that orange and flatten it out, how can you keep that face from mushing out? He couldn't do it mathematically starting. He did it artistically and added the math later, so to speak. Rand McNally was so pleased with it. The National Geographic was so pleased with it. They distribute 11 million maps a year. Finally, the Pentagon, the Defense Department, called him, and they were replacing their Mercator with what he's done. It's there in Madison, by the way. People can go see this and 280,000 other maps. But yes, the science of cartography, the modern science of cartography, owes itself largely to this man who chose to work in Madison. He when he left Washington, he left at for less than half the money he was making because he loved Wisconsin so much and came back home.
Yeah, it is really a fascinating story. We have, I want to go back to bowling for a minute because Roger in Madison, you asked for a pin setter, and I think Roger was one. Roger, hello.
Hi. Yeah, I did that for a few months when I was a teenager, or maybe 2 months, and began to realize how dangerous it was.
Where did you work? And tell us about being in the pit or wherever they put you.
Well, yeah, there's a pit that goes across the back behind the pin set. There is a pin setting machine still there, but it had to be loaded by hand. It wasn't loaded automatically. So you'd be in a pit, so you're standing knee high to the pins to the bowling lane. So the bowler rolls, and some pins fly, and you're working for tips a little bit. If you'd get a tip if you were quick about things. So the first thing you do is pick up the ball and send it back to the bowler, and then you look at the empty spots on the triangle, and you put the pins that are missing. You pick up the pins off the bottom of the pit and drop them into the pin setter in the places that are empty, which takes a little bit of spotting the right places, because you don't want to have to pick up a bunch of pins later and kind of straighten it out. So then you jump up onto a bench that's elevated back behind the pit, hopefully before the bowler rolls.
No helmets or anything in those days.
No. One of the things that we had a couple of daredevil pin setters who were admittedly real fast at what they did, but they would actually hang out in the pit until the ball got about halfway up the alley, and the bowlers could see us in the pit. They knew that guy wasn't up on the bench yet, but he was kind of messing with them. So it was really unusual for a pin to get up onto the level of the bench, but every once in a while one did. And I saw somebody two lanes away from me get pretty badly injured and decided I was done with that job.
Are you done with that job? Well, that makes some sense. But I bet the people who did that had really strong wrists and really strong arms, because pins aren't they're kind of heavy. They're a little bit heavy. Roger, thanks so much. Rosie and Blair, you have something relating to that too. Hi, Rosie.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. My dad told me, and I remember going to the bowling alley. We had two lanes in a real little place, and Dad would bowl. When he would bowl, the pin sitters would leave the pit. Dad would throw so hard that they saw him coming and they just left. And then they go back in after he was done and set him up again. And then if he had any had a split or anything, they'd do it again. They'd leave again. And he used to tell me every once in a while that he'd throw so hard that he'd break the pins.
Oh, strong man. Rosie, thanks for that story. Oh, my gosh.
Sounds like Fred Flintstone to me.
Ron, thank you, Rosie. Ron in La Crosse, as long as we're on this theme, let's go there. Hi, Ron.
Yeah, we have a local bowling alley still in business called the South Lanes. And years ago, well, back in the 1950s, I'm old enough to remember, I didn't bowl. I was just a little kid, but they did have pin boys. And once in a while, if a bowler didn't wait for the pin boy to reset the pins manually, if he threw the ball, that kid, the pin boy, would let him know. He'd yell at him. You know, some of the kids probably from the wrong side of the track. You know, the type that kept a pack of cigarettes under their T-shirt sleeve, that sort of thing. But my dad goes back even further to the He said back in the 1930s, it wasn't called the South Lanes; it was called the Culture Club, and he said they had slot machines.
Okay.
Well, there were slot machines around Wisconsin. I don't know if you ever did a story on slot machines.
We really haven't, but yeah, I think that's one-armed bandits. Prohibition and just coming out of it and things like that. It's probably tied into some of the gangster stuff too. I mean, we weren't far from Chicago.
Oh, well, before we move on, one more comment. John in Milwaukee called to say that the Holler House in Milwaukee is the oldest sanctioned alley in the United States, and they still have pin setters.
What's the name of it?
Holler, H-O-L-L-E-R, Holler House in Milwaukee.
Thanks for the tip. We have gotten some tips from some of your listeners who called in, and we followed up on them, and they've resulted in good stories, Larry. Thank you.
Oh, boy. Well, you know, another story, just on a different topic, that when I was just a little kid, we had the Cottage Grove hardware store. I would go with my dad there once in a while to pick things up, and it was a fun place for a kid to wander around in. And you got a nice story about hardware stores.
Sure. Bill Morrissey of Sun Prairie has written, this is again another memories story. He's written a number of pieces for us, and again, this is small-town stuff, but he's rhapsodizing about Fanshawe in the 50s and 60s, and he's rhapsodizing about Fanshawe Hardware in Waupun. Mr. Fanshawe coached his baseball team, but also sold him a scroll saw and convinced his parents that he wouldn't cut off his fingers if he used it. Also, Blow Hardware in Waupun, where you could pick up every kind of fishing bait in the world. And in Nakusa, Feldner's Hardware, and Bill's wife grew up there. He talks about Claudia when she was a baby being weighed on the nail scales to check her growth there at the counter. And the story I liked the best was, you know, Claudia is a teenager working, giving free gift wrapping, and a neighbor came in and he bought a gift frying pan, and he gave it to her and said, "I need this wrap, but don't put it in a box. I need you to wrap this frying pan." And she worked at it and worked at it and worked at it. And he only later, after a long time, admitted that he didn't need a frying pan. He just wanted to see if she could figure out how to wrap one and still disguise it yeah. from what it was. Small-town entertainment. Good, clean fun.
Oh, my goodness. Well, I think my first baseball glove came from the hardware store, as a matter of fact. You could get pretty much anything at the hardware store. Oh, man. How do people, by the way, get copies of Our Wisconsin and subscribe and so forth?
Well, you can give a call to this toll-free number. That's 877-902-9760. Or you can go online to OurWisconsinMag.com.
OurWisconsinMag.com or 877-902-9760 is the number to call, right?
Right. Thank you. And I think we need to talk about a current day story, because this woman's my hero. Thelma the Quilter?
Oh, yeah. She was... And the guy in here, we're just about out of time, but she's 98?
She's 98. She's an active quilter still. She's done it 61 years, and she's from Crandon. I'll try to make this a little bit short. But
30 seconds.
Okay, her son Dan Flannery tells the story. He worked at the Appleton Post Crescent. His mother has quilted thousands, and one of Dan Flannery's co-workers, Bernie, this is the Bernie and Thelma journey, decided to ride all over Wisconsin, and he did 2,100 miles one year. Visited Thelma up near Cavour and Argonn, near Crandon, and bought quilts from her, started gifting them to people. By the time he was done, he bought 514 quilts and gave them all away as gifts to his co-workers, anyone he could think of. And
it's a great
spreading
story.
Kindness. That's people in Wisconsin.
Oh, man. Mike, it's always a pleasure. That's a great story. Our Wisconsin magazine, the magazine we've been talking about today, and Mike Bino is the editor. Well, thank you all for listening, and please do stay with us. Lots more in store here on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mueller.